Yeah. So, what's your first name? David. David Slade, Pasha of Bahab, Hosei.
Good morning. This Shia Bez Hashem is for a Fuhr Shleimer of Bela Bastavara. This week's Parsha is Bahar B'Chukosai. Chazal tell us, Tichle Shona B'Kilelo Seha. We want to have this Parsha before Shavuos begins. And really, this Parsha should have been exactly before Shavuos begins. We only interrupt with Parshas Bamidbar, which occurs next week, in order to make a hefsek between the advent of Shavuos and the Tochacha, which occurs in this week's Parsha. But if it wasn't for the fact that we wanted to make this interruption, this hefsek between Shavuos and the klolas, the curses of Kisavo, in theory, Chazal were quite interested that this Parsha should be immediately preceding Shavuos. In theory, they wanted to arrange it in this way. So obviously, there's going to be some message in here for Shavuos. Be'ez Hashem, we'll get there in the course of the discussion. Now, at the end of the Tochacha, the Klolos in Parshas B'Chukosai, immediately afterwards, there is the Parsha of Erechim. And if you look on your sheet, I've written it out over here. We'll refer to it, Be'ez Hashem, it's number one. We'll refer to it in a minute. So the Baal HaTurim and the Kli Yakar both ask, what is this subject of Erechim doing immediately after the Tochacha? What's the connection? Why should the Torah see fit to put these two topics next to each other? So Baal HaTurim says, because there are 143 klolos in the Tochacha. If you add together the 45 sukim of klola of B'Chukosai, and you add them together with the 98 sukim of klola in Parshas Kisavo, together 98 plus 45 makes 143. That's what Baal HaTurim says. And if you add it together, all of the erechim mentioned in the parsha, the total amount is also 143. That's what the Baal HaTurim says. And he says, and this comes to teach us, that through giving Erechim to the Beis HaMikdash, through giving these voluntary donations to the Beis HaMikdash, you can get rid of the effects of the klolos of Parshas Kisavo and Parshas B'Chukosai. That's what he says.
There are 49 klolos.
I think 45 psukim and 98 psukim. Okay, you're welcome to look in the Bible. Okay. This is the numbers that the Baal HaTurim gives, and the Kli Yakar echoes this sentiment. So this already raises one or two questions. If the Erechim are supposed to be a way of getting rid of the klolos, wouldn't it have made more sense to place the Parsha of Erechim after Kisavo? Kisavo is where the second set of klolos is written in the end of Devarim. And there are 143 shkolim mentioned in the Erechim to counteract the 143 klolos mentioned in this week's Parsha and the Parsha of Kisavo. Wouldn't it have made more sense, if you're trying to make a counterbalance, to counteract the effect of those klolos, wouldn't it have been better to write the Parsha of Erechim over there in Parshas Kisavo? Why are you writing it here after the first 45? If you want to counteract, write it after the 98. When you've got the total number of klalos, and you want to counteract the total number of... put the Parsha Berech in there. Why is it here? Why is it written in this position? That's one question. Another question is that if you're busy trying to threaten and to warn Klal Yisrael, why divide up the klalos in the first place? Why are there two completely different sets of klalos? Why is the one here in Parsha Berech Kosai and one in Kisavo? Be economical, right? Write it all together, and let's get on with it. You know, why split it up in this way? And finally, if the Torah is interested in putting the klalos next to the erechin, right, then there must be some profound intrinsic connection between these two subjects. The Baal HaTorim told us one counteracts the other, that's fine, of course. But in addition, there must be something more behind the scenes happening here. There's an intrinsic connection between the klalos and the erechin. Right, now, can we have a look now at the number one? Number one on your sheet. Yeah? I just wrote it out in order just for reference purposes. Speak to people of Israel, say to them, a man when he promises to give the valuation of the nefoshes. Yes? This is how you're going to do it. Okay? The male between 20 and 60, he has to give 50 shekel. The female has to give 30 shekel. Right? If the age is between 5 and 20, then the male is 20 and the female is 10. If it's from 1 month old until the age of 5 years, then the male is 5 shkolim and the female is 3 shkolim. And if it's over 60, then the male is 15 shekel and the female is 10 shekel. Okay? That's what it says. Now, there are those who... we're now going to digress for just a couple of minutes, because I think this is a very, very important point to make, although it's not directly relevant to what I want to say, but it doesn't matter actually, because I think it's more important than what I want to say, because this is a very fundamental point. This is, everyone should need to know this, yeah? If you look at the way these psukim are written, right? Consistently, the valuation of a male is more than of a female. Now, there are those who are opposed to those who wish to belittle or denigrate Torah thought, and they say this proves that the Torah is misogynist. It's anti-female. It puts females in second place. There is such an opinion. However, of course it's not true. Because Chazal say that it's only in the zechus of the Noshim Tzidkonios that Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, not the men, the zechus of the women. Right? And we have whole prokim in Sefer Shoftim about a prophet called Devorah, who single-handedly almost saved Klal Yisrael from disaster. So it's absolutely, and in all the onshim and all the zechuyos, the Torah always puts women and male exactly equal, right?
He had trouble. No. He was not born a Kohen, can never eat trouble all his life. A woman, that is trouble, she marries a Kohen, so she can eat trouble.
Right? For example, so this is a very typical, for example, yeah? The Torah does not denigrate or put women in the second place at all, right? So in which case, why do we have these consistent, the women are always given a lesser valuation, a lesser erechin than the man, right? So there are at least two answers. I found two answers, there are probably more, but the first answer is this, that if you look throughout the psukim, you see the word for valuation, erech, is written erechecha. With an unusual chof at the end. Every single place it's written erkecha. And Rashi on the Psukim says that he doesn't know grammatically why the Torah in this place decides to write the chof. Yeah? So Rashi's talking grammatically, but the Darshanim, who are Al-Pidrush, they say the reason is very simple. Because in human society, it is true that the way people look at people, they do esteem the males of the society more than the females. That is a universal truth. Right? It's not the way Hashem looks at females. Hashem looks at females to be the exactly equivalent of males, depending on their level of tzidkus, whatever. There's no difference between Nefesh A and Nefesh B. The fact that they have a different gender is irrelevant in the eyes of Hashem. But the way people perceive it, there are differences. And they do delegate, and they do, and the society always, and still does, give greater value to male than to females, right? That the average wage earner of a female executive, right, is going to be less than of a male executive, right? Because she has to take off maternity, whatever the story is. This is the emphasis of the chah in Erechin, Erechachah. Consistently, Erechachah means your Erech, your valuation, the way you perceive things, it's your Arachim. That's why the male, there's a disparity between the male and the female. Because we're dealing with the way you perceive things, not with the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu perceives things. That's the extra chof, okay? That's one answer. And the other answer is that Erechin, like an insurance policy. There's a Gemara that says that there was a certain lady that during the time of the Korban was very worried about the fate of her child. So as to protect him, to provide a zechus for him, she used to donate to the Beis HaMikdash his weight in gold. Erechim, she used to give Erechim. Eventually the siege became so intense, she was no longer able to make these donations, and eventually that child came to a very bitter end. So the Mefoshim see from there that giving one's value in gold to the Beis HaMikdash is a kind of insurance policy. Now everyone knows that the premium of an insurance policy goes up in accordance with the risk factor involved. Right? If you've got a young man in front of a turbocharged Lamborghini, yes, his premium for motor insurance is going to be significantly higher than you've got an old man in front of a Volkswagen, right? Because everyone knows the risk factor determines the premium. So, and that's exactly the idea here in the Erechin as well. When you've got a male between 20 and 60, his potential for damaging himself and the world is much greater than the potential of a female between 20 and 60. And that's why he has to pay a higher premium. His erech is a higher premium. Yeah? And similarly, all the different age groups. Yes, between 5 and 20, there's less potential for damage. Between 1 month and 5, even less. And over 60, also goes down. Right? So on the contrary, if the Torah gives a lesser erech, a lesser valuation for females, it's on the contrary esteeming the female, saying that she has a lesser potential for damaging herself and the world than the males do. That's why the erech, the valuation, the insurance policy, is less. So it turns out the exact opposite of what the critics of Torah would want us to believe. Those who want to belittle and denigrate the Torah say, look, this parsha shows us the Torah is inherently anti-female. It puts the feminine in the second place. It's absolutely lies. It's balderdash, right? For at least two reasons that I've given you now, yeah? That on the contrary, the Torah puts her up. That's why the Erech is less. This illustrates, it's a perfect illustration of what the Gemara says. I just wrote it down, number 6. You've got number 6 on your sheet, yeah? Amar Rav Yochanan, kol mokum shepokru haminim shivosim betzidon. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, wherever the apikorsim, wherever people who wish to belittle, to pull down the Torah, find an opportunity to do so, if you just examine carefully what proof they're bringing, you will find the refutation. Just look, where they're bringing their anti-Torah polemic, from that point, at exactly where they're bringing it from, examine carefully and you'll find the pircha. Okay? Right, I think that's a very important point and worth saying. That's why I bring it in, although it's not directly relevant to what we're trying to say. Right, let's go on then. Right, so now, after the Erechacha, the Torah writes the word Erechacha because we're talking about our valuations. That's the emphasis on the Chaf at the end of Erechacha, our valuations. Once we know that, we're now in position to answer the questions before. Right, but first we need just to look at this parsha a bit more. If you look at the parsha, it starts off by talking about the ages 20 to 60. It goes on to 5 to 20, then 1 month to 5, then the over 60s. That's the way it's written. Now, seemingly, it's written out of order. It's written in completely higgledy-piggledy, totally at random, right? Either, you know, be consistent. Either start 1 month to 5 to 20, 20 to 60 and over 60. That would be more logical. Or if you want to go down, start at the over 60s, and then go downwards. Then the over 60s, then 20 to 50, then 5 to 20, 1 month to 5. Yeah? Why does the Torah write it in this strange way? Right. Now, in order to attempt to explain this, I'm going to have to go into a subject which, is unpalatable, but unfortunately, it's true. It happened. It actually happened. I'm quoting now from the Rabbi Dessler B'Shem the Maharal. Rabbi Dessler B'Shem the Maharal says, what is the idea of a korban? What does a korban do? What does it achieve? So he quotes the Maharal as saying that the korban expresses an idea. We're trying to say nothing has existence independent of Hashem. When compared to the ultimate source of existence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing else matters. Everything comes from Him, everything goes back to Him. An animal is a very high level of creation. Yes, there are four levels of creation: domain, tzemeach, chai, medaber. Four different levels. You take an animal and you shecht it, symbolically making a very dramatic, very vivid statement. No life has any significance, has any relevance, when compared to the existence of Hashem. Everything is bottle and mavutl when compared to the existence of Hashem. That's what a korban is. It expresses this idea. Right, now please brace yourself for the following question, but I'm just quoting from Rabbi Dessler. If that's the idea of a korban, that everything is bottle and mavutl, yeah, and we don't bring rocks and stones on the Mizbeach in front of Hashem. We don't bring plant life, yes? And we bring animals, yes? And we're trying to express everything's bottom and bottom to Hashem. Fair enough. So why, surely, logically, just with logic, not with emotional logic, wouldn't it be reasonable to offer human sacrifice? Because man stands at the pinnacle of creation. Right? He is the purpose for which creation. And if you're trying to express the idea, everything's bottom and bottom to Hashem, yeah, and no, nothing has existence in him, and everything goes back to him, everything comes from, etc., etc., take a human being. Do it that way. Wouldn't that be an effective, dramatic way of making the same point?
Hashem gave us power over animals, but not over our fellow man.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's correct, 100%. The Maharal wants to say, even theoretically, not in practice, but even in theory, if it were to be that A owned B, let's say in theory he did own B, yeah, what would be wrong with A trying to express his total bittul, his self-abnegation towards Hashem, by taking B and slitting his throat? What would be wrong? Just in theory. Theory. Right. What would be wrong with doing this thing? Yes, in theory. Yeah. What would be wrong as a concept? Right. If A would own B, what would be wrong in theory? Yeah. So he says. It's very simple. Because a korban is a once-off action. You shatter the behemoth, he's dead. A human being has the capacity to produce Kiddush Hashem, to demonstrate his bittul to Hashem millions and millions and millions of times throughout his life. Every second of his life, every time he keeps a halacha, every time he refrains from an aveira, every time he does a mitzvah, he is demonstrating his bittul before the will of Hashem. So if A goes and takes B and shechs B as a korban, he may have gained one moment of recognition, Hashem is the all-powerful, the only existence, etc., etc., but he's deprived B of millions and millions and millions of times B could do the same thing.
How could person kill person?
Yeah, no, it's the same. This
depriving him from doing mitzvah.
I need to emphasize, this is a purely theoretical discussion.
Yeah, but not the theory.
This is the Maharal. I'll give you the Maharal Mokum, and afterwards, if you want to look it up, you can look it up. He's just trying to explain to you in theory, that's right. Pursuing a form of logic. I know it's emotionally, it sounds absolutely crazy, but okay, we're talking in theory here. Give me a sec. Mikhtav Me'eliyahu, number 2, page 195. Yeah? Welcome to. I didn't print it here, but you're welcome to look it up. Mikhtav Me'eliyahu, volume 2, page 195, brings down all this raid. Okay? Right. Now. However, okay. That was the first point to make, right? There is an ideal in theory. That's in theory. There's an ideal to bring human sacrifice, but in practice we don't. Right. Now let's get practical. Can we get practical now? Practical. Please have a look at the sheet I printed over here. And let's have a look at number 2. See number 2? So it says, Lo sa'aseh kein, l'ashem elekeichem, ki kol tva'av as Hashem, asher sonei, asu le'elohim. Do not imitate the ways of the goyim that you are going to be surrounded by. Because all the disgusting, abominable things the goyim did, they did to their avodah zarah. Gam es b'neihim, es b'noseihim, yishrafu ba'esh le'elohim. They were busy burning up. The Torah says this, not me. The Torah says it, that the goyim used to burn up their children to their idolatry. You can look it up. It's in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 12. Right? If anyone wants to look it up, it's there. That they used to do this. The goyim used to do this. This was a very acceptable ungunmana veg to din and the getchka. This is what you do. You take your kids and that's how you do it. You know what I mean? That's very, very acceptable. Now, unfortunately, as usual, the Jews were influenced by the cultural norms and what was politically correct of their surroundings. And if you look at the next two quotations I've written down here, unfortunately, have a look at what the Novi Yechezkel is telling them. Number 3, yeah? Niafu, gam b'deim, gam gulem, niafu. They've gone mezana after avodah zarah. Gam es b'neihem asher yolduli, even their children that they gave birth to me. Hayvir lehem la'ochla. They, these are Jews. These are the Jews. These are not. This is not. This. These are the heilige ancestors. You know. This is the Novi Yechezkel. They took their kids and they shechted them in front of the avodah zarah. They shecht their children to the avodah zarah. Talking about yidden. And then they come to the base of mikdash and they start davening to me. You know, cross it, the south base. That's what they do. This is Yechezkel is talking about what the Jews were doing, not what the goyim were doing. What the Jews are doing. You look in the next quotation in Yirmiyah, number 4. The Otsasa El Gei Ben Hinnom. Go to Gehinnom. Go to the valley of Gehinnom. Asher Pesach Shema the Karosah Shem. Mr. Dorian, yeah. Vamata Shimu Dova Malka Yehuda. Have a look. Listen. Amash Hashem Tzavakas Yisrael. Himli may be ra alamokam azeh. I'm going to bring evil on this place. Asher Kol Shema Tatzilin Asner. Anyone that hears what's going to happen is his ears will ring with shock. Yana Shazavuni, they've abandoned me. They cut you, Berlin Himachim, they've been busy offering up incense to Avodah Zarah. And they filled this place with the blood of innocent children. They built altars to burn up their kids. Ba'esh, in fire. Olus the Baal. They've taken their children, they've offered them up as korbanos to the Avodah Zarah called Baal. That's not what was the intention, right? So these are Yidden who are getting involved. Right? So once you get the idea, once you see this concept of the concept of a korban is bittul hayesh, total negation before the higher, whatever you want to call it, right? Then it makes in logic. You can understand that man, who is the pinnacle of creation, he will be the best korban because he stands. That's the highest form of negation, the highest form of life. Yeah, as explained b'shem the Maharal, and that's what they were doing. The goyim were doing it, the yidden were doing it, right? They lived this way. If you look at the next quote, look at the next quotation from Micha, number 5. He says, "Listen to this." Bamai kadem Hashem. The Micha is talking now in the name of his fellow Yidden, okay? And those who are expressing remorse for their avarice. Bamai kadim Hashem, how can I come before Hashem? Ikach lelekeim maram, how can I demonstrate my humility to Hashem in high? Hagdenim v'alash, I bring lots of korbanos. Bagolim v'neishash, I bring lots and lots of calves. Hayetz Hashem v'al pe'elim, does Hashem want me to bring thousands of rams? Revos nach le'shamin, tens of thousands of these fat bulls. Now, listen to this. Ha'etein b'chari pishi. Maybe I should sacrifice my firstborn child to atone for my avera. This is Micha speaking in the name of Klal Yisrael, expressing Klal Yisrael's innermost thoughts. That Klal Yisrael thought that the way to atone for their averas is to take their child and to shecht him in front of Hashem. Ha'etein b'chari pish, I offer up my firstborn child to atone for my sin. Privitni chatas nafshi, so I give the fruit of my stomach to atone for my sin. To which the reply came, of course. Higid l'cha adam, Micha says, no, sorry, you've misunderstood the point. Higid l'cha adam, ma'ato, if you're looking for good, I've already told you what's good. Ma Hashem derish mimcha, what does Hashem want from you? Kim ases mishpat, do justly, avas chesed, do acts of kindness, vaseh lechech m'Hashem l'kecha, and walk with humility. So Micha, okay, that's what Micha, that's what we know. That's in our blood. That's how we live. Yeah, dosidos, that's Yiddishkeit. But you see what the other Yidden were thinking. You see what the Havamina was. You see what was going on over here. Not only what they were thinking, unfortunately, you see in Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel what they were doing. They're actually doing it. That they live that way. Right? This is totally alien to us and foreign to us, and Baruch Hashem, for reasons that we'll hopefully go into later on as well, if we get there. But Al Kaponim, you see, this was a serious Havamina. This is what you do, right? Okay. Now the third idea that I want to just bring to you is what it says in the Midrash on Erechim. Midrash Tanchuma, it's the end of this week's parsha. Amalein Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Hashem said to Klal Yisrael, "In matem mevi'in lefonai Erechim, if you bring in front of me Erechim shelachem, your valuations, mala ani aleichem ki nafsho seichem hikravtem lefonai." I consider it as if you have offered yourselves to me. So you could say that statement means that it's a good thing, you get credited, you get rewarded. Now plenty of times it says, Ma'ala lava kosov ki'ilu. Yeah? Hashem looks at it as if. Yeah? But there are those who have taken this statement much, much more literally. When you get the impulse to offer a human sacrifice, bring the Erechim instead. Calm down. Take it easy. Okay? That's not what Hashem wants. Yeah? We understand the impulse, the urge may come from a very pure place because you want the tshuva. But that's not what Hashem wants. Yeah? Give the Erechim instead. For example, we saw in Micha, yeah, that if they're consumed with guilt and they want to bring their firstborn child as to atone, what the Torah does is encourages them to bring the value instead. Now, this approach is very similar to the Moreh Nevuchim, Maron Avuchim's explanation for all korbanos. Maron Avuchim says all korbanos are just to wean the people off pagan rituals. That's what the Maron Avuchim explains all korbanos. Yeah? So those who explain this pshat in this midrash are doing the same thing. That the Erechim, even the Chazal say it, but they're putting a pshat in the Chazal. The idea of the Erechim is when you get this urge to offer human beings for whatever reason, yeah, do me a favor, leave the kid at home with the babysitter and bring the Erechim instead. Okay? That's the idea. Right. Now, once we know that, we're now in a situation, hopefully, to answer the questions that we began with. Right. So the question was, why is the Parsha written in a seemingly very strange way? First of all, it talks about people between 20 and 60, then between 5 to 20, then 1 month to 5, and then over 60. There should have been some more consistency in the enumeration, right? Either go up from 1 month to 5, and 5, 20, 20 to 60, 60, or go down. Over 60s first, then 20 to 60, then 5, 20, then up to 5. But why is it in this higgledy-piggledy in a random way? Yeah? So, in the light of what I just told you, we have a mahalach now. Between a child, the Gemara says that an orphan boy may not sell his father's property until he's over 20. And that's because until he's over 20, he doesn't really appreciate or doesn't have enough life experience to appreciate the value of money or the value of property or both, right? Some fraudster will come up to him, jangle a few coins in his face and persuade him to part with his father's hard-earned Yerusha, right? But after 20, he can be hoped he's got enough experience of the world to know what yes and what no. Similarly, don't go to the army until you're 20. Army service only begins at 20, right? And similarly, Chazal say that Kadosh Baruch Hu does not punish people who do averus under the age of 20 in the same way as people who do averus over the age of 20. Right? It's all Chazal. So when a person offers the erechin between 20 and 60, what he's doing is he's offering the erech of a fully functioning, mature human being. A person who has this urge to sacrifice, human sacrifice, to express whatever it is he wants to express, remorse, whatever it is he's trying to do, and he has an urge to express it through human sacrifice, yeah? He's just like every type of korban. You always bring the best in your flock. You always look for the best sheep, the best calf. Yeah, that's part of the halakhas of korbanos. Always bring the best. So too, when a person had this urge to offer up a human being, yeah, he would offer up the arachin of the prime human being. A human being in the prime of his life, a human being who's fully functional, a human being who's able to go to the army, who's able to do business, yeah, that would be the choicest form of parallel to a to the korban.
What's the korban
like? That's a different subject. I'm now pursuing this, if you don't mind. Right. Now, the next category. So 2060 is the choicest. It's the choicest. That's why it's put first place. But then we saw in Micha that there was an unspoken wish amongst Klal Yisrael that they wished they could just offer up their children as human sacrifice to Hashem to atone for their sins. So that's as a safety valve, if you like, as a release for this religious urge, yeah. The next category comes in 5 to 20. That's the children. Right now, obviously, children are between 5 and 20 are far more valuable and would be far more valuable as korbanos than those between 1 month and 5, because 1 month and 5, you know, can't look after himself really. 5 to 20, walking, talking, would represent a higher level of korban than those between 1 month and 5, which is why the 5 to 20 age group appears before the 1 month to 5 age group. Yeah, that. And a parent would never have an urge to offer up a child less than 1 month old, because we don't even know that child is viable. So just like an ordinary korban, a person wouldn't offer an animal that had no chance of living, so he would have no urge to offer up a child that couldn't live. So what we're coming out with, just to finish off, the last group are over 60s, right? So over 60s, same thing. The people did not consider people. Don't forget, I'll start off telling you with a chaf. It's all your perceptions, your evaluations. That's what the emphasis of the chaf on erkacha, this unusual letter written, right? It's all to do with human perceptions, not how Hashem looks at things. In this parsha, according to this mahalach, Hashem is giving us a safety valve, a release, a placebo. If you've got this urge to do what the Yidden in the times of Yirmiyah and Yechezkel and Micha were doing, if you've got the urge to do what the Goyim were doing, yeah, do it like this. Give these erechins. So the over 60s were not considered to be a prime sacrificial material in those days, right? And therefore, they appear at the end, right? As you see. Right. Okay. Now, I hope everyone has managed to recover from that. And with that introduction, yeah, we're just talking in theory, okay? But you see it happened. Right. Now, after that, we now go back to the questions that we started with and hopefully find a solution. First of all, why are the klolos divided up? Why is it that half of them appear in B'chuk Kosai and half of them appear in Parshas Ki Sava? And the other question was that if there are, like the Bala Turim says, 143 shkolim in total of shkolim, and they counteract the 143 psukim of klala added together in Parshas B'chuk Kosai and Parshas Ki Sava. You put them all together, yeah? And that's why the Parsha of Erechin appears after. Yeah? So we asked the question, we said, well, one second, if the point of Erechin is to counteract the klalas, then why don't you put the Parsha of Erechin in Parsha of Kisavo? When all the colours are finished, when you've got them all, you've listed them all out, then put the Erechin after Parsha of Kisavo when it's all over to make a counteract, make a counterbalance, like the Bala Turim says. Why do you do it here in Parsha of Hukosai? It seems to be interrupting in the wrong place. You put it in the wrong place. Right. Now, I didn't write this down, but there are psukim in Yirmiyahu, for example, that actually, excuse me. We're going to do it. I want to read you this pasuk from Yirmiyahu. It's pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Here it is. Listen. From the day your forefathers left the land of Egypt until this day, I sent you all my servants, my prophets, daily rising early, sending forth. Right? He's telling them, listen, I'm sending you Nevi'im to tell you to shape up. Yeah, shape up, improve all the time. I'm sending you Nevi'im to do it. Right? So for now, after the klolos, yeah, after misfortune befalls people, or they hear threats of misfortune, right? They knew, they weren't stupid, these people. The Chalashim were not stupid, especially when they got Nevi'im telling them what's going on. Yeah, knowing I've got 4 minutes now has flustered me a bit, but I'll try and calm down and get it through. So the point is like this. A person who's suffering, yeah, or he's worried he's going to suffer, right? What would he do? Right? Typically what he would do is he'd try to find a quick solution to get out of his troubles, to free himself from his distress. That would be what he was tempted to do. Now, as I showed you these psukim over here, what might someone living in those days be tempted to do to get out of his problems? Do homeless sacrifice. Get a kid and shecht him. That's what he might be tempted to do. That's a quick, easy way out, right? That, as Micha said, that's what the people wanted to do. But that isn't what Hashem wants, obviously. What Hashem wants is internal change, like Micha says. Yeah, love of justice and the pursuit of chesed. Yeah, that's what he wants. But the Torah recognizes that people who are suffering or frightened of receiving suffering, they need to do something straight away to just calm themselves down. It's going to be better. It's going to be okay. Don't worry, yeah? Just calm down a bit. Then you can think it through when you've got more peace of mind. That's the point of the Erechim. That the Torah gave the Erechim as like a placebo. Yeah, do this. You do this, and you'll be out of your tzaras. This is the way. They hear all these colors. They hear all these misfortunes about to befall them, and they're desperate for some kind of quick, easy solution. So a person in that state of mind, might do anything. So the Torah says, well, give the Erechim, and that'll help, right? And that's a lot better than human sacrifice, right? But the fact that the people want to attain forgiveness, the fact that they want to do it, it shows that at least they're on the right track, right? And that's how the Erechim do counteract the Klolas. It's not just a placebo. It's not just to calm themselves down. The fact is, the Erechim demonstrate a sincere desire in the heart of these people. They do want to do something better, right? And therefore, that's what the Baal Turim means. That's how it works to counteract the Klolas. Because at least Hashem recognizes you're on the way to improvement. You're giving away your money, okay? You're on the way to improvement. I'll take that into consideration. Oh, now, just the last 2 minutes, to answer the other questions. Why are the klolas divided into two parshas? One in Parshas Kislev and one over here in Bechu Kosai. Yeah, the Ramban answers this question. He says that they refer to two epochs in history, two different time periods. Well, the one here in Kislev, Bechu Kosai, refers to the Bais Rishon and immediately after. Yeah, but the ones in Kislev refer to the Bais Sheni and after that. Okay. And he brings all kinds of proofs, yeah? And amongst the proofs are that the Avera of idolatry, Avodah Zarah, is not mentioned in Parshas Kislev. It's only mentioned here in Bechu Kosai. So you see, because in the time of the Bais Sheni, there wasn't any Avodah Zarah. Actually, Knesset and Gedolah got rid of it. They smashed it to pieces. The Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah had been destroyed, yeah? Well, if the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah has been destroyed, then correspondingly, this concept of wanting to sacrifice to the higher thing, to this yearning for thing, has also diminished. And that's why, and the Bais Sheni, you don't need to have the placebo effect of a substitute for human sacrifice. Because you haven't got the same urge towards human sacrifice to get a quick fix, to get you out of your tzaras. You haven't got the same temptation. You haven't got the same pent-up desperation doesn't exist in the time of the Bais Sheni. That's why the Erechim appears here and not there. Okay. Right. And finally, just to come back with the opening, what's this got to do with Shavuos? Yeah, I started by telling you that in theory, Chazal wanted this Parsha to come just before the Matan Torah, just before Shavuos, right? Only because we make a Hefsek, that's why. But in theory, this Parsha should be. What's that got to do with it? Because we are so fortunate, that the Torah tells us how to direct our human drives. The Torah tells us, listen guys, we understand that you've got certain drives, urges, we understand, but you know what, do it like this. We're not verblodgered, right? The goyim do not know which way to give vent to whatever they happen to find themselves programmed with, whatever urge or drive arises in their mind. I don't know which way to go, this way, that way, that way. This is the Torah telling us, go this way, and that's your benefit. And that's the connection to Matan Torah. And Ashrinu Matov Chalkeinu, and thank you.